Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, listeners out there. This is Ryan O'Halloran, VP of Security Strategy here at Imbalance IT, bringing you episode 15 of the Balancing Act podcast called Calling All APIs. Today, I have with me my special guest, Tim Erlin, to discuss the state of API security and the threat landscape. Tim is the Vice President of Product at WallArm, a company that provides unified platforms for API and agentic AI security. Tim, thanks for so much for joining me today.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Let us start with maybe an overview of your background and then kind of what led you to join the mission and vision of WallArm.
Sure. Yeah, of course. I've been in cybersecurity for quite a long time, actually. I started as a sales engineer at a startup. I think it was employee 20 or 22, something like that. And through just a series of acquisitions kind of grew from there. I've always been in the space of vulnerability management or configuration assessment. And I started to feel, as technology shifted, I started to feel like there was this gap in what we were doing around APIs. And I couldn't, just based on who I was working for at the time and what our products were doing in the market, I couldn't really work to fill that gap. And so when I found WallArm focused on API security, I felt like it was a great opportunity to fill a gap or work to solve a problem, if you will, that I felt like the cybersecurity industry was failing to solve. So I'm really happy to be at WallArm. I think it's a great vision and a great product.
That's awesome. I know one of the statistics that shocked me early on was something like, over 40% of business revenue depends on API calls. And the likelihood that that's understood by the business themselves is very low. Right. And now it's more and more develop the software, do it securely, create the secure AI, use the AI responsibly, right? All these different things. And I think there's an awakening there of how important this really is. For those that aren't as familiar with APIs, can you describe what an API is to a listener and why it is so important to a business?
Yeah, I tend to think of APIs as sort of the connective tissue or the new wires that connect applications together. So as technology has evolved, we've moved to more complex application infrastructure, and more of these applications consist of a series of systems behind the scenes that are connected by APIs. Increasingly, organizations are also offering APIs themselves as a business service. To other
opening
partners,
it up
to
the
business.
World.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're privately. Yeah,
that's right. So you'll see statistics, depending on where you look, that somewhere between 70% and 85% of the internet traffic is now API traffic. And that's because these APIs are being used so consistently and so pervasively to connect things together. And just for additional information, APIs come in different flavors. They're not all the same protocol. So there are different API protocols that are suitable for different types of applications as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. A way to kind of be illustrative for listeners out there is when you open up a web page and all of a sudden all these marketing things pop up and these videos things pop up and these ads pop up, all those things behind are the connective tissue, as Tim's describing, that pull in to the forefront. It's not just, hey, I wrote this web page and this and this and this is here. All these embedments and things we see, all that traffic that's going on to do all these things, it all is API related.
Yeah. But you only described all the bad things. So you also have to think about what's inside that web page, not just the ads and the pop-ups and those kinds of things, but the database of products that are being listed. That's an API connection. The pricing for those products might be a separate API connection. So all of those components generally are connected via APIs in the background.
Yeah. When you have separate applications, to your point, an inventory system versus an ordering front end or something
right.
like that, that's the only way that you can get that real-time visibility into what's in stock and so on and so forth. And this goes on and on and on and on. Now that we kind of described what an API is, what they're capable of, and kind of the state of it. Can you help listeners understand what threats are out there and what you should worry about, and describe, you know, what, how are those threats different than the things that most users are more familiar with, like ransomware, you know, those types of things. These threats are different. These attacks are different. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Ransomware is always my favorite, because it's the only type of attack that has to announce itself in order to be successful. So we know a lot about ransomware, because by definition, for ransomware to be successful, it has to tell you it's there. Behind the scenes, there are all of these other types of attacks where the attacker doesn't want to be discovered. And they may use those attacks actually leading up to ransomware. The ransomware might be the last thing the attacker does. But when we talk about API specifically, because that was the question you asked, it's an interesting question. In some ways, the attacks we're talking about are not that different. It's that the technology has changed, but the attacks themselves, some of them are very similar, if not the same, especially when you take a step back to a layer of abstraction. But, you know, a good example is SQL injection. SQL injection has existed for a long time. The ability to insert a database query somewhere it shouldn't be in order to get access to data that you're not supposed to have access to. That existed with web applications. It now exists with APIs as well. And because it's very effective, it's still a very popular attack. All kinds of injections are very popular with APIs. The challenge is that the tools that we might use to detect them in one format, say against a web application, don't always work for APIs. They have to understand the API protocol. They have to be able to parse it, look for the SQL injection in all the different places it might exist in that API request. There are also attacks against APIs that are a little bit more unique or specific to APIs as well. And there you can talk about some of the behavior-based attacks. You know, things like account takeover attacks and data scraping, things that are manipulating the behavior of that API. And that sort of leads to the next level of attack sophistication that we're talking about a lot, which are business logic attacks. So these are attacks that actually aren't specific to the API itself. They're specific to the business logic of whatever application that API is servicing. So then we're talking about doing things like, you know, using an expired token that the application should invalidate, but the application doesn't have the right logic to do that. And so you can continue using that token after it's expired. Or another example, any kind of missing state transition where you can skip steps that should be validated in order, for example, to skip a payment step. That's always a good example to give. That's another business logic attack. So the scope of attacks that people should worry about is fairly broad. The simple attacks, attackers always rely on those because they're easy, they're cheap. If they work, great. But we also have to worry about these business logic attacks as well that are developing.
And I think another thing, it's sprawling, right? Just like anything else, and so pervasive to your point earlier, but also they have an identity. So there's this non-human machine identity that they have with authentication and things like that. And people think about, you know, usually end users being challenged with MFA and things like that, you know, when the business's lifeline depends on the availability of all of these systems, it's not like the API can click an MFA request for itself. So understanding what's normal and then what's abnormal, so you can do something about it, and also being very careful not to break anything, which might cause a financial loss event worse than the attack itself. Talk a little bit about that kind of dynamic, because I think that's a really important thing to understand.
That's right. Who checks the I am not a robot checkbox, the CAPTCHA, when it is a robot, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I had an interesting conversation with an industry analyst a while back about MFA and APIs, because he gave me an example where an organization had implemented MFA. Great. MFA is a great tool. It does a great job of protecting against a difficult class of attacks. But they had implemented MFA and left the API behind it available for password-based authentication. So the attackers, you know, yes, the web application would prompt for multi-factor authentication, but you could just go directly to the API and you could get around it. And so, these implementation choices do make a difference for sure.
Yeah. And as businesses are growing their software development practices, you know, and some of them are pretty nascent in it, or it's new for them to expose their own internal APIs, which are probably not as developed, to the public internet, now you have service accounts and things like that that are available that have a lot of permission to move laterally, similar to like historically internally, right? We have service accounts to run databases and applications and all sorts of things. But the difference is the exposure to the internet and then still having that permission, right? And those things being created, not necessarily under the governance of the IT department who's provisioning users in Active Directory and things like that. And that, I think that makes it a little bit harder. So next, maybe we can move into that. You know, there's a broad realm of application security, you know, and some business shift left, if you will, although you can kind of use that term in different ways because we want to catch it earlier than later, no matter what it is, right? But software development teams are more and more often starting to get code guidance right when they're in the IDE as they're writing it, and then also scanning the code at rest after they've written it, and then also scanning it once it's in runtime, pre-production, and then trying to correlate those things just so they can get this done as soon as possible. And there's kind of like these two emerging, I guess, focuses now around, okay, what about that API and that AI on the side? And also, don't we need to discover those threats? And also, don't we need to protect those threats? And how can we block them when we're so dependent on them being available? Can you talk about where API's security fits in that broader spectrum of application security?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think it fits in at all the steps. That phrase shift left, which has become sort of popular from a marketing standpoint, it's really only half a phrase, because the whole phrase is shift left, shield right. And it developed because we were unbalanced on the shielding, on the detective controls. And so there was this push to say, well, we need to shift left in order to, you know, remove risk before things are put into production. But that doesn't mean you give up on the shielding right. That's still an important component. And so you want to think about it as a balanced approach. Are you removing risk, and are you, you know, blocking attacks against the risk that you were unable to remove for whatever reason? And so API security fits into all those spots, right? You want to assess the APIs that you're building so that you can remove risk from them before they go to production. If you find vulnerabilities, you've got to make a decision about, do you fix that vulnerability? Do you patch it? Do you accept that risk? Which is a valid decision. And then once those move from development into staging or testing, you of course want to continue testing them and removing risk at that point. And then when they're in production, you absolutely want to block attacks, especially attacks against risks that you know you have, but even attacks, you may not have found all the risks. So the attacks that are coming in, they're looking to exploit risk that you may not have found. And you definitely want to be able to detect and block those attacks as well. So it's a whole spectrum of capabilities. Yeah, but you did mention something there that I think is important, because you asked about where API security fits into application security. And I think there's a really important conversation about what counts as application security. Because if you as an organization are developing and deploying APIs as part of your product, your AppSec team is focused on how do we protect the things we're building. But every organization you interact with and buy from, they're also building and deploying APIs. So you need to protect the third party, the commercial APIs that you're acquiring and deploying as well. And the AppSec team generally isn't thinking about those APIs that come with a commercial product that someone else is deploying and managing.
That's a great point. Yeah. You know, as you're bringing them into your fold, you need to understand what that envelope of risk actually looks like before you add that into your pool. Most definitely. And, you know, I think it's interesting. I love the shield right comment, because the other thing is like you're saying, once you're in production, these attacks are often pretty novel. They are sophisticated increasingly, right? And then we're even seeing, if you're, you know, providing a service, software service that, you know, has a lot of confidentiality risk and things like that, we're seeing these bug bounty programs and the rise of continuous pen testing and the incorporation of AI into it, right? Just because it can't afford to lose that time, right? Between doing one test and then getting a report, and then you've all of a sudden, you know, you missed it, right? Yeah, and that's really interesting to me too, because that seems to be an emerging aspect of app security in general as well, but also largely focused around attacking business logic manually and then hopefully automatically or more automatically over time. And a lot of times with application testing, you don't necessarily, security testing, you don't necessarily know if that pen tester or if that system or whatever is trying to abuse logic as an attacker would think in their mindset. You know, they might just be running a dynamic application security test with something that's out there and saying, oh, you have these vulnerabilities, to your point earlier, you got a SQL injection or you have, you know, weak credentials, something like that. And that's something that's, I feel like these things are, you know, becoming the infrastructure teams are becoming more aware of them, and that the application teams need to be more enabled and empowered to fix them earlier than kind of throwing it back and forth over the fence playing volleyball too, because it's also how you're maintaining these things and vulnerability management general, like you're saying. And then how do I prioritize them based on the real risk, you know, the ones that have high value assets, the ones that are exposed to the internet versus the ones that aren't, that type of thing. And that's difficult too, especially with continuous integration, continuous development, right?
Yeah. And there's a challenge there with, you know, you want to say siloed development, but it's really specialization, right? So if I'm a developer, I'm focused on building and testing the component, or maybe just the whole, the application that I'm responsible for. And I might actually think about security, and I might look for and address vulnerabilities. Maybe I've got a tool that tells me about vulnerabilities. But if that application is a component in a larger system, as a developer, I'm not thinking about the system as a whole, and I'm not thinking about the interactions between components.
Right. So you're thinking about your unit and your own little world. Yeah.
And even if I do a perfect job for security of my one piece of the puzzle, the connections between the components, there are gaps there. There's space there for attackers to exploit. That's the business logic approach, right? That's the business logic abuse. So it doesn't necessarily require a flaw in code or a flaw in software. It requires that the attacker understands how your application works as a whole better than any individual developer who's you know, building and managing it. And that's a tough problem to solve. It's not easy.
Yeah, definitely. Now I got to move to the must-have topic around AI. You know, the day isn't complete unless you've said it at least 25 times. So, you know, knowing AI obviously is increasingly, you know, being adopted, and business cases are being drafted around it. You know, customers are having to get their data governance story together. With generative AI or agentic AI or the variety of things that are out there, talk about a little bit the relationship between API security and, let's say, a large language model or that chatbot that we're using, or, you know, the other things behind the scenes and what we need to think about there, because those threats, like APIs, some of them are the same and then some of them are also different. You know, the poisoning of the files that it's grabbing, or the MCP process that's sort of managing that, or, you know, the model itself, does it have good data inside of it? And has that been poisoned? So it'd be interesting how talking a little bit about how those things intersect and what that problem is, you know, kind of in unison.
It was interesting. We hosted, I think it was last year, an API summit, API security summit. And we had one of the speakers was, one of the people from OWASP behind the LLM top 10. And the point of his talk was that the LLM top 10 and the API top 10 from OWASP are essentially the same thing. And he went through and he basically found that there are three of the LLM top 10 that are specific to LLMs, and the rest are all essentially the same as the API top 10. So there's significant overlap here. And when you think about it, if you break down what you're getting with generative AI, there are large language models. There are AI applications, so some kind of application that leverages a large language model. There are AI agents, you know, that's relatively new but very popular. Yep. It, you know, a subset of an AI application that also takes action as opposed to just generating content. And then I would call there sort of the AI supported apps, where, you know, you don't know that it's AI being used, but in the background it's calling out to some LLM. And if you look at the attack surface there, most of that attack surface is API based. When you connect to an LLM as a chatbot, that interface, that ChatGPT interface, if you will, the interface itself is an application with an LLM or multiple behind it. That's all API driven.
Connected by APIs. Yep.
It's all connected by APIs. That AI app that someone's developing, that's connected by APIs. The AI agents, they're not only connected by APIs, like you connect to them with an API, but everything they do to take an action, whether it's connecting to another AI agent or connecting to an LLM or connecting to some, you know, system that changes a reservation or books a ticket or whatever it is, those are all APIs. So when we look at that realm of generative AI, it's just full of APIs.
Yep.
And so we're seeing, not only do you need to protect, not only are APIs the control surface for the AI apps themselves, but they're also driving an explosion in APIs to support them. So the more integrations you need for that AI agent to take action, the more APIs you're going to have deployed in your environment. And so it really is just this proliferation of APIs that directly overlap with AI. That being said, there are a few specific things about, you know, securing LLMs themselves that are not API driven or not controllable over APIs, that, you know, things like training data poisoning, which you mentioned, fit into that category. But if you're looking to protect the API, the AI in your environment, if you're deploying AI agents or AI apps, the starting point has to be those APIs that connect them.
Yeah, that's the outside exposure, outside in. You know, just
right.
Like your firewall at your edge, traditionally, you got your outside in and your inside out. You got to make sure that that first gate is as strong as possible. And then, if someone abuses privilege and they got inside and they can move into your model and do things there, that's one thing. But it's going to be easier to sort of do remote control. And often I think of APIs as a remote control, you know, for it to do whatever's going on. And another thing that you mentioned, because I still think it's a little confusing, the difference between large language models and agentic AI for people. And I think you nailed it on perfectly. And I just want to kind of highlight and underscore that with the LLMs, you know, it's all about generating content. Mm-hmm. With agentic AI, it's about creating an outcome.
Yes. Yes.
Self-sustained outcome. And that puts more risk because now there's an actual action versus just sort of an assimilation of things. And eventually we're going to get to that kind of third tier of AI, right? Where it's like, you know, the machine thinking for itself type thing. So this problem has to, the risk problem has to be focused on and resolved as soon as possible, because that journey from step one to step two to step three, as far as what AI is capable of doing, it's not a super long roadmap.
That's
kind of scary. So it's something to consider as well, how important this really is. So thank you. I think we've done a great job of describing what the threats are. So let's talk a little bit about the protections, right? What are the types of tools that are out there that organizations can use to protect their APIs?
Yeah. So, you know, I always like to think when you talk about protecting a particular technology, the abstraction of security controls that you need hasn't really changed substantially. Like the controls are the same. It's a matter of what tools fulfill that control, that criteria for the technology that you're talking about. So, you know, you need tools to find and remove risk, you know, early in the cycle. You need tools to monitor and block attacks. You need tools to, you know, validate identity, you know, provide identity and authorization services. These things are true across the board. Sometimes that you know, authentication and authorization is built into the application itself. You might find that you want to use something like an API gateway to centralize authentication and authorization to manage that traffic. Great tool. But that API gateway, it doesn't detect and block attacks. So you want a tool in place that's designed to specifically detect and block attacks. And you want to make sure that it can actually take action, because detecting attacks and then, you know, not blocking them or having a process where you have to do something manually or with a delay, you're gonna let attacks through. So that real-time blocking is important. And then on the risk identification and remediation side, then you're talking about security testing. So there are lots of security testing tools out there. The question is, do they actually test APIs effectively? And many of them don't. You know, if you're looking at tools that are focused on source code or focused on web applications, they often miss vulnerabilities in APIs. So you want to find something that works really well with the APIs. And when you talk about the detection and blocking, you want to find something, a tool that understands the API traffic. So look at what API protocols are you using? Is it REST? Is it GraphQL? Is it gRPC? Are you using WebSockets? Do you still have SOAP in your environment? Make sure that the tool you have actually understands, parses, and protects those protocols as well.
Yeah, and like anything else, right, you can't protect it if you're not aware of it. So just like there's shadow IT, there's shadow APIs, right? So these tools need to do a better job of discovering the APIs that exist, right?
Yep.
In order to be able to actually make those inclusive of the protections we have, regardless of what tool we're using.
And I think that discovery, discovery and inventory process is a pattern that repeats itself over and over again with new technology. So, you know, you used to have that problem with servers in your data center. And then you'd have that problem with, virtual instances, virtual machines. Then you had that problem with cloud. Now you have that problem with APIs. Like discovery and inventory is always a challenge with any technology as it evolves.
Yeah, no doubt. So, you know, comprehensively, what would you say are the key components of a complete API product? Right? Is it discovery, alert, and block? Is there other pieces in there, and then you're not seeing as much block as the first two? To me, it seems like we're kind of in the middle where there's maybe a little detect, but there's not as much discovery and there's not as much block. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So we break it down into four required components: discovery, protection, response, and test. Because we can remember four things. So on the discovery side, that encompasses inventory, but also some risk assessment of, it's not just what APIs do I have, but what are they doing? What sensitive data they expose or do they process? What risks are exposed there? And then protect, I like the term protect because it combines that detection and blocking. It's not just detecting that an attack occurred and monitoring that it occurred. It's actually protecting the resource behind it, the API behind it. And in that protection side, as I mentioned, you've got to make sure you can protect the API protocols you're actually using and the ones that you're planning to use. And you're right that what we see in the space today is a lot of detection and then integration with something else to do blocking. Maybe it's a WAF. And that presents a number of problems. There's a time delay there. So you've let an attack through, you've identified that attack, and now you'll block future attacks, but you did let an attack through. And there's also an architectural problem, because if your WAF is deployed around your perimeter, as they tend to be, then you can't protect the APIs that aren't behind the WAF. It's architecturally limiting. The response piece is also an interesting one, because it asks you as a practitioner to think about what do you need in order to respond effectively to these events. You need context about the event. You need to know what happened before and after the attack. And you need integrations with the tools that you use in your environment to get work done. No cybersecurity tool is a silver bullet and solves all the problems. They have to work with each other. And then testing comes in as testing could be at the start, it could be at the end, maybe this is a circle, but you want to identify and remove risk pre-production, so as part of your CI/CD pipeline, but also in production. So making sure that you have a way to actually identify risks in production is important, because vulnerabilities are discovered. This is a continuous cycle. You've deployed your API, a new vulnerability comes out that affects it. You could not have found that in test because nobody knew about the vulnerability. So you also have to pay attention to production and remove risk there as well.
Yeah, and when it comes to the protection phase, right, blocking it, like you're saying, before it gets through, that's that area we talked about earlier that can be a little touchy, because you might, if you're blocking a known good and you don't have great fidelity in that process, it can be very harmful. Can you talk a little bit about what the mitigation options are, and then how folks are kind of easing into enforcing those with a soft gate versus a hard block, so to speak?
Sure. Well, so yeah, you can talk about this from a process standpoint. If you're deploying a new tool to protect your APIs, you can always start with a monitoring mode or an out-of-band approach so that you're not actually impacting traffic, just to get a sense of how the tool performs, what does it detect, what does that look like, and then turn on the blocking as you gain confidence in that tool. But the second piece of that that's important is to understand what action you're actually taking, and is it the appropriate action for that type of attack. So if you think about attacks as coming in sort of two big categories, there are stateless attacks, which are attacks that are just a single request. That's a SQL injection is a good example here. remote code execution, path traversal. These are things where the attacker just sends one request, it either succeeds or it doesn't, and they get the data back they're looking for. In that case, you want to be able to block that specific request. That's a very targeted blocking action. You say, look, this request looks like a path traversal attempt, I'm going to block it. And then all the other traffic might be legitimate, you let it through, that's great. You also might want to block whole IP addresses. So you know, you might have a, you know, a list of known malicious IPs, or you want to block everything from a specific country.
Yep.
Or, you know, your application
geofencing,
is,
blacklist, whitelist,
yeah,
old
exactly.
School. Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. But that doesn't work really well for blocking specific attacks, because that IP address might be used, shared. So it's sort of a big, it's the hammer. It's the blunt instrument.
Yeah.
The middle ground there is blocking a specific session. So for behavior-based attacks that aren't a single request, but occur within the context of a session, like account takeover attempts or data scraping, you want to monitor those sessions and then be able to block that session specifically. That gives you the ability to surgically block that attack, but make sure legitimate traffic continues flowing through. So making sure that you have the right options for mitigation is definitely important.
That's awesome. And I definitely agree. And I think that that's eye-opening, for a lot of folks. And when I talk about also kind of awareness, and this is going to be probably my last question for you. A lot of CISOs out there and security management, right? They start a lot of times in network security. Mm-hmm. They are very familiar maybe with cloud services and things like that. And sure, there's some that have started in application security. But for businesses out there that have this widespread infrastructure, and they're doing mergers and acquisitions, and they're doing all these things, there's a chance, because you're divorced from being deep in the weeds, that application security is that thing that you're a little weaker on, right? And that's a gap that we all have to fill, right? And understand AI too, right? What would you say the chief information security officers and executives out there that don't understand development should know or take away from this?
So I would say that if you think application security, or if you think API security, this is a tough one, because today we do think of API security as part of application security, and I want to change that perception. If you think of API security as being the realm of your developers, then you're missing the bigger picture, because the bigger picture is that APIs are that connective tissue. They are the new network. So when you're connecting two organizations together, yeah, you've got to connect at the network level, but the business gets done at the API level. Those applications that you're sharing data across, they're connected by APIs. And so you need to think about those API connections as the network, the new network over which the business runs. And so as a CISO, you've got to understand how the business is transacted, how the business, businesses are connected over those APIs, because that's where the revenue is. In most cases, that's where the revenue is. And so, when we talk about CISOs being business savvy or connecting technology in the business in order to manage risk, APIs are just a huge part of that equation now.
No doubt. Tim, thank you so very much for joining me on this. I learned a lot. I hope the listeners did too. And I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. That was a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely awesome. So, listeners out there, Imbalance can be your guide, for education, selection, and execution of your AppSec strategies or your API business strategy. Let's make the difference, right? Reach out to us today and we can help. Hit up www.imbalanceit.com. Please follow the Balancing Act podcast if you found today's information helpful. I know I did, and I learned just as much by doing these. We appreciate you listening and invite you back to check out our next episode. Thank you.
Inbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Inbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at inbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.